Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. We are talking about the Billy Meier case this morning. Billy Meier is an 80-year-old man. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland, which is about 45 minutes to an hour from Zurich. He's nestled in a pine forest there in the mountains of northern Switzerland. He's had extraterrestrial contacts since he was about 5 years old. The first 11 years of his life, he was mentored by a man named Spoth, who was from a star system called the Pleiaren star system. Spoth lived on a world called Era. Era was populated, I think, about 230,000 years ago when a group from Lyra Vega left the wars that were occurring during that time, and King of Wisdom named Asael led 183 great spacer ships to this other world, and the Pleiaren started an existence free of the governments that existed in Lyra Vega. In Lyra Vega, in another space-time configuration, there was what I call a race of titans who had learned the laws of creation and learned how to master the power of their thoughts. And they became incredibly powerful in their material consciousness. And some of these leaders, these kings of wisdom, abused this power. So our universe is very different than what we've been told. Our history is very different from what we've been told. And I thought it would be good to step back a little bit and look at the laws of creation as taught by the Meier case. Our universe is one of multiple universes that exist. There is a parallel universe to ours called the Tao universe. Our universe in the Meier case is called the Dern universe. And both of these parallel universes are 46 trillion years old. The scientists that we have now can only view matter. And they think the universe is about 45 billion years old. That's because they only can see the matter in our universe. But our universe has both a non-physical side as well as a physical side. The Meier information refers to our universe as a creation. And the creation is not a god or a father figure. It is absolutely without gender. It is both positive and negative in complete equality. So our universe is neutral positive. It's neutral. Its power and wisdom is the greatest in its own space and time structure. So there are universes outside of our universe that have their own universal consciousness. And there are other universes that are more advanced than ours. In fact, our universe is at the first step of its evolution. And our creation is bound to the laws of what's called the Ur-creation. The Ur-creation is a higher power of consciousness. And the Ur-creation created our universe out of its own idea. And the Ur-creation is bound to the laws of a higher might consciousness called the Absolutum. And the power of the Absolute Absolutum pulses through all creation forms. Our creation, you could also call the universal consciousness. It is a completely neutral energy. It's not a person. It's not a personification. So this is completely contrary to the belief in God. For example, the Father, by various religions, talk about an immutable superintelligence, let's call it. The Meyer case is saying that every universe has a superintelligence, and each one of these superintelligences is evolving. So it's not immutable. It does change. It does improve itself. In fact, the purpose of our lives plays a role in the evolution of the universe. Our creation creates spirit forms, which then evolve. Our spirit form resides in the middle of our brain and in an area called the superior colliculus. And each physical lifetime that we live, we gather wisdom, and it's stored in our spirit form. And it's also stored in the subconscious. It's programmed into the subconscious of the new material consciousness, because in each new life, we get a new material consciousness. So after we go through all these evolutionary cycles, which last over a billion years, 40 to 60 million in a physical phase in the first five steps, and then like 20 or 30 million years in the second half physical, half spiritual stage, and then there's a billion years plus that we exist in this spiritual plane before we finally evolve back and merge with the creation. But our creation is ruled by the laws of the Earth creation, and the Earth creation conforms to the laws of the absolute absolutum. So our creation is the highest intelligence within our universe, and it's evolving just like we evolve, just like all life evolves. And the creation is the planets and the stars, and it also is the life of all the flora and the fauna. And there is something called the spirit energy, and the spirit energy exists in all life forms. So, and it's very important to understand that the universe that we live in is the material manifestation of the wisdom of the universal consciousness. Our universal consciousness has created certain laws for our universe. One is the law of love. And love is the highest form of a creational natural law. And there's the law of striving, which is the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. And then there's the law of harmony, which is the bipolar structure that everything exists in. So this creation spirit energy is interweaving through the entire universe. The entire universe and universal consciousness is laced with this energy. And the intelligence of the universal consciousness should not be thought of in the form of the intelligence of human beings. The intelligence of the universal consciousness has the effect of bringing forth life forms. And this spirit energy enlivens all life forms, whether it's humans, animals, creatures, microbes, bacteria, viruses. So our creation is a neutral, positive, what's called in the German, the Wesenheiten. So in some ways, it has more in common with gases and stones and mountains and oceans than it does with a human being. Because a human being has a personality. Your cat, your dog has a personality. All life forms, all animal life forms have some aspect of a personality. But our universal consciousness, it has no personality. And here's the irony. It has no personality, yet it radiates love. Love is the highest principle in all creation. Yet we think of love in human terms. And we cannot imagine something without a personality having love. But it does. Our creation created the planets and the stars and all the life, all the flora and the fauna. The creation is the existing and the pulsing of all life and even death. Really, death is just another form of life. The creation is existing and pulsing in all life. But our creation is the lowest form of a creation. There are multiple universes, many, many universes. Our creation also has the lowest form of the swinging wave. The swinging wave is talked about in the Meyer material. The swinging wave is identified by the word schwingen in the German, and it's these electromagnetic waves that are talked about in the teaching of the spirit. And they periodically build up these electric and magnetic fields, which are not bound to any matter. The swinging waves include immense power and might in the kings of wisdom, these Ishwishes, and even the player and themselves have learned, and Billy has this ability as well, to use these swinging waves. Semyase burned some photographs with her mind, and that's an example of this swinging wave. And the energy that comes from these swinging waves, again, is in a waveform. So wave is the best way to translate this. And the wave, the swinging wave, is related to an area called the Gemüt in our spirit form. We have the something called the Gemüt, which controls the thoughts and the feelings associated with the spirit consciousness. And the spirit consciousness, the spiritual consciousness, the human being has a spiritual consciousness. And the Gemüt is kind of controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. So your spirit form is a fragment, operationally speaking, of the universal consciousness. So you have this bit of the universal consciousness within you. It's the part of you that never dies. It brings out your true creational inner personality, and it's kind of your link to the creation. And that's what we're talking about today, is the universal consciousness. So our creation, again, is the lowest form of all the creations, and it has this lowest swinging wave form that we just talked about. It's the least old and the least developed of all creational forms, and it's at the very beginning of its evolution. But our creation must evolve from the lowest form to the highest form of evolution. And it will eventually evolve into the absolute absolutum form within a certain time period. It has a time period in which it must evolve. And this is related to the fact that we have the creation is a different form of life than we are. It's both immaterial and material, but it doesn't have a self-determining possibility of evolution. See, we as human beings, with our personality, we can evolve slower or faster. We can, for example, we incarnate into physical form from 40 to 60 million years. And after 60 million years, we evolve naturally. Our free will has a much bigger role in our evolution, whereas the universal consciousness, it, after 155 trillion years of expanding, it must go into its contraction phase. Our creation will continue to expand for exactly 155.5 trillion years. And when this first expansion phase is finished, it will enter into its contraction phase. All material and spiritual things that are created during this initial expansion phase. Only in the first expansion phase are spiritual and material forms created. And then after exactly 155.5 trillion years, our universe starts to contract. And that's why it's called a Wesenheiten. It follows this exact process where we have, you know, some 20 million years of personality time, so to speak, in our own evolution, because at least when we're evolving through physical bodies, some people will have all their evolution finished in 40 million years. Others may be 50, others maybe go to 60. It's up to us to determine when that happens. But creation evolves, and its expansion and contraction phases occur at these predetermined intervals. So our creation is currently 46 trillion years old. It's in its first expansion phase. It will go through many of these expansion and contraction phases. One great time is one expansion and contraction phase. So the expansion phase is 155 trillion years. The contraction phase is 155 trillion years. And then we go into a state of slumber. The sleep phase, which I think is the sleep phase, is, I'll have to double check on the length of the sleep phase again. So before there was ever a Big Bang, there was a pre-birth phase for our creation, which lasted three great times, which is about 933 trillion years. And after this long time passes, our universe began its first wake cycle. And this was the Zohar, the Big Bang. So this is what our universe is. So how different this is than, for example, what we talk about in religion in terms of God. And let me step back a little bit, if I can, and talk about Jehovah and who the Maya materials say that he was. And I know this is very controversial, but we'll go with it here for a minute. Jehovah, mentioned in our Old Testament, was an extraterrestrial man. He was a part of what is called the Giza Intelligences. And the Giza Intelligences existed underground, far below the Giza Plateau, and they were on the Earth until about the middle 1970s, at which point they were taken off the Earth by the Pleiaren and other groups, and imprisoned or placed on a very primitive planet with all, they took all their technologies away. Eventually, the Giza Intelligences passed away. Now, there, one of these Giza Intelligences was a mutineer called Hen, and he was known as Jehovah in the tongue of the Hebrews, and he was called also the Cruel One. And this he made himself known about 3000 BC, and he took over for Erisane. Erisane was the one that went far below the Giza Plateau and ruled from there. So Jehovah was said to have destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, one of the things that Jehovah did. And he did this, according to Meyer information, with nuclear weapons. He wasn't the creator of the universe. He didn't create our creation, our universe. He didn't create all the other universes. So what has happened, at least from the Meyer material perspective, is very, very interesting and strange. Because, and if you think about it, I mean, if you look at certain passages in the Old Testament, for example, one of the ones that was always so strange and puzzling to me is there's supposed to be only two people on the earth, Adam and Eve, and they have sons, Cain and Abel. Well, Cain kills Abel. And the next thing we know, in, I think it's chapter 3 or chapter 4 of Genesis, that Cain is taking a wife from somewhere in another area called the land of Nod. And Cain not only finds a wife, we don't know where she came from. She's not mentioned as one of the offspring of Adam and Eve. And then Cain is building a city. And the city is for who? Well, we don't know. So we have in our Old Testament this missing information. And I think the theologians try to fill in these gaps, and people want answers. You know, people want to know what our history is. People want to know how to live their life. And they gravitate to these religious teachings that, if you're really objective about it, they don't stand up to logical scrutiny very well. So you have to believe. That's what you have to do. You have to believe. And that's about the best you can do. There's another section in Numbers 31:7 where Moses commands the Israelites to wipe out the Midianites, and armies of Israel go in and kill all the Midianites. Well, they kill just the men. They kill just the soldiers and the men. And then they come back, and Moses is very angry because Jehovah has told them to kill the women and the children too, but they're allowed to keep the virgins for themselves, which is puzzling. Now, if this is the creator of the universe, why isn't the creator of the universe doing these deeds? Why do people with clubs and spears and swords have to go in and kill women and children? And why are they required or allowed to keep certain virgins for themselves? How does this jive with the other teachings in the Bible? It's very, very, again, and what you'll hear from theologians and scholars is that these people were very evil, the Midianites. You know, we had to wipe them out because they were very, very evil. They were demonic. We had to wipe them out. Well, then why did you keep the virgins? You know, and there may be even another convoluted theological explanation for that. But you see, these religions, they don't stand up to logical scrutiny very well. And one of the things that the Meyer material talks about is not depending on belief, rather depending on knowledge and learning to be independent in your thinking rather than a dependent follower. And the religions create dependence and they create submissiveness, where the spiritual teaching is designed to help you to think for yourself and to help you to be independent in your thinking. So let me again elaborate a little bit more on the Giza intelligences. And they go back all the way to Eris the Barbarian. Eris the Barbarian, from the perspective of the Meyer teachings, was one of these Ishwishes who came here from Beta Centauri during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And he kind of got the whole war started between Atlantis and Lemuria. They're the third born son of Eris the Barbarian was a man named Jehave. And Jehave and all of this, part of the story is talked about in Contact Report 9. Now, Jehave was murdered by his firstborn son, Arisane. So we've just kind of moved forward in time a great deal. So if you look at the time frames, just to kind of get a frame of reference for yourself, according to Meyer information, about 130,000 years ago, people came here, Atlantis and his wife, and the guy that built Mu came here, and they constructed these two great cities that lasted for a long, long time. Eventually, there was this war, which was started by Eris the Barbarian and his followers. And the war ended in an asteroid being slammed into the Earth about 11,500 years ago. So the people that survived this catastrophe, they lost their technology. They were struggling to survive. After a few generations, they lost their history. They didn't know who they were. They didn't know where they come from. They were like primitive people, and they were very influenceable. Well, these extraterrestrials started to come back to the Earth, and the Earth was trying to recover from this catastrophe. The great catastrophe occurred about 11,500 years ago. And through emissaries, these Giza intelligences mixed teachings, these false teachings, and spread these false teachings to the people of the earth. It was primarily the gypsies of the Nile and the further vicinity of the Mediterranean Sea and the Red Sea who held on to this false teaching and spread it. The Meyer material calls them the Hebrons, I guess the same as the Hebrews, I would guess. And Arisane lost control of these people that lived underground. These were extraterrestrials living under the ground. And Arisane lost control, and this fellow named Jehovah took over. And he gained control of the Giza intelligences, and these Giza intelligences were trying to gain control of the earth through lies and deceit and through a misleading, wrong kind of teaching, a kind of cultic false teaching, which was very skillfully weaved into religious teaching. So that's what the Meyer material says happened thousands and thousands of years ago. And what we have now are religions which have stuck around for thousands of years because of these false teachings. And it's like I said earlier, if you start looking at any of these religions, you can see the logical inconsistencies very easy. And it's very, very difficult to be open-minded, to be objective, and to stay with the religions over time if you continue your own personal evolution. It will become more and more difficult. Now, one of the interesting things that's coming out is that even in Islam, many of the passed down teachings of Muhammad are wrong. This is not things Muhammad. Muhammad never promoted war, but if you read the Quran now, it says kill the unbelievers wherever you find them. So we're really in a bad state on earth in terms of our consciousness because our religions have led us down a path which has really, we're stuck in a cul-de-sac. We just need to turn around and drive back out of this cul-de-sac and get reoriented and figure out where the heck we are. I didn't really intend to go this direction today, but it's funny how all of this kind of fits together, and it might be a good day to segue into another topic that I've talked about before, and it's really interesting when you study the Meyer information, where it takes you. It has taken me places where I never expected to go. There is a spiritual lineage associated with every one of us. We all have a spirit form. You know, remember I was talking about creation. And within us, we have a fragment of creation, and we reincarnate over millions of years. Most human spirit forms are about 4 million years old on the earth. So you've had many, many lifetimes. Typically, our past life memories are blocked, which is a good thing, because if we remembered, it would be very, very disturbing to us. We need to focus on the current lifetime because the point of our existence is the evolution of our consciousness, growing in wisdom and knowledge. And to do that, you have to learn to control your thinking, which is very challenging and very tough sometimes. And that's why I've spent so much time on the book, The Might of Thoughts. Well, we all have these other lifetimes. So we have a lineage of our previous personalities. Same with Edward Albert Meyer. He has a lineage of previous personalities. And, you know, it's really interesting because he's such a down-to-earth guy, and he doesn't like this whole notion of gurus. He's very, very down to the earth. And I was, you know, I try to be neutral. I try to be not pro or con, but always just searching for the truth. And one of the areas of the Meyer material that I didn't judge, I didn't go negative on it, I didn't go real positive on it either, was the whole story of Emmanuel. And I thought this was very strange. I thought it actually discredited the Meyer case a lot, that they said that the name of the person that we call Jesus was actually Emmanuel, until I started to do some research, and I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. Our history, as it exists, is a web of convoluted lies. It's just unbelievable. I'm going to talk a little bit about the First Council of Nicaea now, which occurred around 325 AD. Nicaea is near the Black Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, near Turkey in some ways. It's below Europe. And the Roman Emperor Constantine, right around 325 AD, tried to get together all of these leaders, religious leaders. Well, one of the interesting things is they were trying to come to an agreement on what the name of the leader of Christianity was. And so Constantine set up this big meeting around 325 AD, and he wanted to get these religious leaders together, and he was going to let them hash it out and let them decide what this fellow's name was. You know, we think his name was always Jesus, but the name Jesus really didn't come around to about 1600, which is astonishing. There was no letter J in the ancient world. There was no, not in Hebrew, not in Greek, not in Aramaic, there was no letter J. Now, for example, the name Julius Caesar is something we call him. He wasn't called Julius Caesar at the time, but we call him that now. That J was either a Y or an I, which is hard for us to pronounce. So Constantine's intention was to unite all the religious factions under the one deity. And he asked these leaders to debate and decide on what his name would be. So they had these heated debates, and there were what's called howling factions, and there were like 53 different names. So no god had been selected by the council. So eventually Constantine decided upon the name of this god. You know, they still didn't, I don't know, somehow it was lost. His name was originally Emmanuel. If you look in Isaiah, I think it's Isaiah chapter 7, and maybe it's Matthew chapter 1, verse 23, it says his name was Emmanuel. And now today we rationalize that whole thing and say his title was Emmanuel. So you get this real fuzzy, kind of unclear teaching from religion again. So according to some scholars anyway, Constantine chose the name Jesus Krishna as the official name of the new Roman god. And the new god was proclaimed and officially ratified by Constantine. Keep in mind there was no letter J for the name Jesus Christ. So the letter J did not evolve until around 1550. And not in the Hebrew, not in the Greek. So there was a man named Gian Giorgio Tarissino is credited. He was kind of an Italian scholar, which is credited as the person that came up with the letter J and started substituting it in certain writings for the Y in the I. So Gian Giorgio Tarissino did this. So if you look in the 1611 version of the Bible, it'll say Our Lord and Savior, I-E-S-V-S. Sometimes the letter I was pronounced with a Y sound. For example, the Greek spelling for quote-unquote Jesus is often pronounced Jesus. So the name Jesus is really a hybrid that kind of evolved over time. And eventually, since classical Latin didn't have a distinct J sound, as we know in English, it was often Julius Caesar, or I even have on my website a photograph of a 1611 King James, which says Our Lord and Savior, I-E-S-V-S. So, and some will say the spelling Jesus came in a court document in 1632 in England. It's probably the first printed example of that name that we can see. So, and the letter J originated as kind of a replacement. You see, the Old English didn't have the letter J at all in it. It was missing the W, the J, and the U in the Old English. And these are facts that you can look up for yourself. Go on the internet, go on the web, and look up the alphabet of Old English. You know, H-I-K-L. There is no letter J. So no one in the English-speaking world before about 1600 ever said the name Jesus. It's illogical. It could not have occurred. There was no letter J for them to say that name. So now think about that. The name James and John, for example, James's real name was Y-A-A-Q-O-V, Yaakov. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. John's real name was Y-A-H-U-C-H-A-N-O-N, Yahunan. Who knows? I'll let you pronounce that. So that is the central figure in Western culture, the most important person that all of our religions, you know, whether it's Islam or Christianity, at least those two major religions, talk about Jesus. And there was no man in the ancient world by that name. And that can be very easily, logically established through a little research. Now, you can argue he was called Yeshua or Emmanuel or Jesus, but you cannot argue logically in the existence of a Jesus, which is astonishing. Now, think about that. I certainly did not expect to discover that when I started this research. I expected to discover something which would contradict the Meyer information. But I didn't. So this is quite astonishing. Now think about the implications of this. Most people will reject this because it's easier to reject this information than go through the whole process of reorganizing and reevaluating your point of view. Most people cannot take in an information, logical, factual information, and reevaluate their worldview. They're not willing to do that. They would rather oppose it. They would rather not experience the cognitive dissonance. And cognitive dissonance is where you feel uncomfortable, because you have to admit to yourself you were wrong. And you have to admit to yourself that you've been fooled. And then you have to wake up to the fact that you live in a society that's living with wrong assumptions and wrong ideas. And this is, it can be too traumatic for some people. In fact, they'll run from this. Rather than try to deal with reevaluating their knowledge. Now, let me give you a little more evidence for this. In many ancient paintings of the crucifixion, you will see the acronym I-N-R-I at the top of the cross. And these letters stood for a Latin saying, the words Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium, where the Latin uses the I instead of the English J and the V instead of the U. Now today we say Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. Well, it was never pronounced that way. It was always Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium. The acronym I-N-R-I represents the Latin inscription that is at the top of these paintings. Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium. And I remember, you know, I've got, you know, the equivalent of a computer science degree and equivalent of an art degree. And I can remember in art history class, and it was a Jewish guy that brought this up. And I started to wake up then because he was talking about the INRI and what the acronym really meant. So if you look to the old paintings, you can confirm what I'm saying for yourself. Now, there's also the word Yeshua. And if you study the origin of words and their meanings, and you can see in some ways English is a collage of many different languages. And many of our words of our language actually come from other languages. Jesus is what's called a transliteration. So if there isn't a... So with names, you can't translate a name. You just take the letters and you try to come up with an equivalent in the other language. So a transliteration is the conversion of a text from one script to another. Transliteration is not a translation. A transliteration is not concerned with representing the sounds of the original. This name Jesus, commonly used in Christianity today, did not exist and would not have been spelled with the letter J 500 years ago. And this is where we get to the origin of the name Emmanuel. And it's really funny, again, if you look in Isaiah 7:14, it says, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a young woman will conceive and bear a son, and his name will be called Emmanuel. It's in the Bible. It's right there. And in Matthew 1:23, it says, behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and his name shall be called Emmanuel. It wasn't the name Jesus. So the story of Emmanuel is told in a book called The Talmud of Emmanuel. And there have been attempts to destroy the Talmud, just like the books of Henoch and Jezira, among others, which were removed from the Bible because they were too close to the truth. Unfortunately, this Talmud of Emmanuel is no longer complete, and it was discovered in 1963 by Billy and a Greek Catholic priest named Isser Rashid. It was discovered in a small cave in the slope of a hill, and the cave contained this ancient manuscript called the Talmud of Emmanuel, which it contains a very different story of a man that today we call Jesus. Isser Rashid started to translate this, and he was very still influenced by his religion, and he translated it in a way that was not correct and gave us very strange and wrong concepts and ideas. And there is a new translation of the Talmud that's available. So anyway, this leaves us in a bit of a quandary, at least in my mind, because we don't have the original Talmud. We don't have the original manuscript. So we're left in a weird state here on the earth. So you're going to have to use your own decision and your own concepts. One of the things that I should do is do some more research, and maybe this is something for some later shows, about certain things that Jehovah said and did in the Old Testament. And I think that is convincing in many ways. At least it's eye-opening. I don't try to force people's viewpoints or try to coerce their viewpoints. I try not to do that. Now, if you look at these Old Testament passages, we would consider the things that Jehovah did to be evil. And the Meyer information teaches that no human being is fundamentally evil. And we are not genetically programmed by nature for evil. Religions teach that there is an original sin that came down through Adam, and that sin kind of corrupts us. So we all have this old sinful nature. But the Meyer information teaches that when people become evil, it is something that is developed over their lifetime. Their spirit form is absolutely neutral. And it's a fragment of the universal consciousness. That's an operational definition. So evil can be denoted as profound immorality. And evil is considered harmful and injurious. And if you want to define evil, it can involve unbalanced behavior, like kill all the Midianites and kill the women and children and take the virgins for yourself. This is often a selfishness, demented, disturbed, unhinged, insane. These are all synonyms for evil. The German word Bös is translated as evil. So what the Meyer information is saying is we're not programmed for evil. And to program means to provide coded instructions for the automatic performance of a particular task. So the Meyer material is saying there are no encoded instructions within our nature to incorporate the automatic responses, attitudes, related to evil. So there's nothing in our genes that makes us automatically evil. Something is automatic when it is done or it occurs spontaneously without conscious intention. So we're not programmed for Gewalt, as it's called in the Meyer material. We're not programmed for evil, despite what the religions say. Now, our thinking is very contagious, and our negative and destructive thoughts others can absorb them, and they can resurface in others. And our thought patterns can be negatively affected by others' thought patterns. And a behavior pattern is a way of acting by a group or an individual. And sometimes that's why it's good to avoid others when they are exhibiting these unhealthy thought or behavior patterns, so you don't absorb them. What does the Goblet of Truth say about evil? Let me read this to you. It says, "And when these abysses of the evil open, it is not seldom that case that they open so wide that a human being who has lapsed into evil can no longer find his way back to the good." So when we fall into evil in our thought patterns, we can pull ourselves back out. The truth is that evil in the human being is learned while he's alive. And something can happen even from an early stage of childhood, which can be traced back into later years. There is no genetic programming of evil. And we have the unconscious part of our mind. And the unconscious mind consists of processes in the mind that occur automatically, like pulling our hand back from the hot stove. So our thought patterns, our happiness, or our Gewalt, as it's called, our behavior is able to be contagious for others. So we can infect others. So, and that's why we've spent so much time studying the mind of thoughts, because good thoughts, good feelings, good habits, and the good circumstances of your life can also be contagious to others. You see, we're not genetically programmed for evil. Evil is a learned behavior. So just when we fall into evil, we can also pull ourselves back out. And these behavioral patterns, bad behavior or good behavior, are contagious to others. So if you show optimism, if you show confidence, if you are relaxed, if you're cheerful, if you're enthusiastic, that also can be contagious towards others. Others can absorb your neutral, positive thinking, and you can help to heal others. But you have to, it has to happen kind of automatically. You can't, I don't think you can go in with necessarily that intention. So you kind of have to do it in a neutral way without, you know, going in and in any way forcing your thought processes on others. So we should have respect and venerability towards nature and towards the creation. And when we do, our thoughts and feelings will have that harmony, and that harmony in your own thoughts and feelings can be easily spread to others. So anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this show. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.